The comments within the following podcast are those of any show hosts and not representative of any company in which the show hosts may represent.
Welcome to podcast number 340. I'm Jaron Reimer, and we've got a packed podcast. Have you ever read the magazine Braille Book Review or Talking Book Topics put out by the National Library Service? There are some very interesting things in the September-October 2019 edition, which was delivered to my home in December at some point, and I talk about some of the items that might be of interest to you. You are welcome to check it out by going to the Library of Congress's NLS page at loc.gov/NLS, and you can find HTML copies that are linked to all of the various pieces of information I will be reading to you from this magazine. Microsoft, Apple, and phishing scams. Michael in Tennessee and I are along with a segment that might be of interest to those people who are new to the internet. Have you ever seen some of the things that are discussed? I think this and the next section of the podcast dealing with SSL, TLS, and Cypher Suites will be going hand in hand on this edition of the podcast. Contact information is at the end of the program, and I'll quickly give it out here. Email and iMessage tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. If you're the text message type, you can text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. And if you're using WhatsApp, you're welcome to send me a voice message to that phone number as well. I will be back with more podcasts very soon. And remember that contact information is also at the end, as well as final thoughts and other odds and ends as well. Thank you very much for listening. Make it a great day. And here comes some information from Braille Book Review. This is Tech Podcast 340. Excuse me for the interruption, but this is better recorded downstairs where I am. I sort of have a very interesting combination here. But I had gotten the September-October 2019 edition of Braille Book Review some time ago after I had moved to this location. And I had been going through the books and such, and I want to get rid of the magazine. But before I do, I like the section they call In Brief, because it talks about various things that you might not know, such as NLS changing its name. And I saw this in a proofreading job that I was doing at Braille Institute. And that says, beginning October 1st, the full name of NLS will change to the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The name was chosen after soliciting input from stakeholder groups and the general public. It removes outdated language, allows us to more clearly communicate the breadth of those we serve, and aligns with the Library of Congress's strategic goal of being patron-concentric. We look forward to continue to serve you under a new banner. it's still going to be known as NLS. But the big thing that I really wanted to talk about was something in here on the third page called Website for Blind Travelers Launched. And it says, the recently launched Blind Travelers Network website provides a platform for blind and visually impaired people to review and share their experiences with travel providers and tourist attractions around the world. The site includes blog posts, discussion boards, and event listings. For more information, visit www.blindtravelersnetwork.org. That's blindtravelersnetwork.org. Also, new technology books from the National Braille Press. And they released several new technology guides for iOS and Android users. Titles include Getting the Job Done with Shortcuts, An Introduction for Blind Users, and Getting Started with Google Suite, A Brief Overview of Google's Most Popular Productivity Apps. The guidebooks are available in Braille, Braille, DAISY, and Word formats. For more information, including pricing, visit NBP's website at nbp.org/ic/nbp/publications/apple.html. Accessible phone available, and it talks about Raise Mobility, an assistive technology company, has released a basic mobile phone designed specifically for the needs of users who are blind, have low vision, or have hard of hearing. The Lucia, which is L-U-C-I-A, phone has large tactile buttons, a high contrast display with large text, and a built-in screen reader with multiple language options. For more information, including pricing, visit www.raisemobility.com/solutions/Lucia_cellphone. So the address is raisemobility.com/solutions/Lucia-cellphone. And that's some of what I found of interest in regards to technology and what's happening in the various aspects. In brief, is brief things that you need to know or that they feel that you should have. There's also, if you are an NLS patron, a section here about searching the online catalog. With over 110,000 books on Bard right now, and of course, the Talking Book Topics section of the Bard website is interesting because they're putting a lot of what they're calling DBC. It's still digital books, but it's differently numbered. And those titles are not even listed in either Braille Book Review's version, which includes all the Braille material, but also in the Talking Book topics itself. Those are library-specific books that they put on Bard, but are not available in the magazine. And I'm telling you that this leaves out a lot of books that people might be interested in. And I looked at that list and I wasn't happy with the selection. There were a few of them that might have gotten my attention. But for the most part, this list of books, even in the Braille side, doesn't really interest me much. Of course, I downloaded some Braille material for an agency I'm not even working at anymore that I had started reading. And I'm not even reading those books because most of them I didn't much care for. I got them for the people because they wanted me to read. And I did, but it didn't seem like there was much of any interest. So I also left for other reasons, but that's not the point. Anyhow, that completes this file from the downstairs department of my headquarters of where I'm located. We'll be back with more on the Technology Podcast when I return to my studio upstairs on the computer in just a moment.
Stop.
Michael in Tennessee to the program. Wasn't expecting you here so soon, Michael.
Well, I wasn't expecting to be back this soon either, but I was listening to a segment in last week's last podcast, and it brought back a story that happened to my mom. It was talking about fishing. And I thought I would come back and give you all that story and just make sure to let you all know what to do and what not to do.
All right, I will let you tell that story uninterrupted, so take your time. We're in no hurry, and I do love stories. You've heard me talk about various stories of things that I've read, and then I get emails of the same thing after I read those stories. So definitely go ahead and let's see what story you've got on this edition of Tech. Go ahead.
So last year, my mom was at my place. She got a telephone call, and I was out. I came back in, and next thing I know, she handed me the telephone, and I heard her say, "I don't know anything about it." So I put the phone up to my ear, and the person on the other end was saying that my mom's iCloud had been compromised. Which, as soon as he said that, I knew that was not the case. Yes, Mom had iCloud at that time, but she wasn't using it. She wasn't using the iPhone at that time. She had previously used the iPhone. But iCloud, should I say. Which, of course, I reported it to Apple because the person called from a phone number belonging to Apple.
I think that is the important distinction here. I think you should repeat that again.
Yes, I was going to. The person called from an actual Apple phone number that belonged to Apple. So I didn't particularly call that number back, but I called a different number that I had for Apple and let them know about the situation. And they told me that they will never contact you by phone unless you initiated the contact first. And so and a similar situation happened with me with a call from Microsoft. And once again, Microsoft would never contact you by phone. In both cases, me and the person on the other end of the phone, this is another giveaway that it's not a real call. The person argued with me. We were in a 5-minute argument back and forth that he was calling from Apple or Microsoft, and neither one of them companies would conduct themselves in an unprofessional manner like those two people was. That's the other thing to keep in mind. If they are combative or on the minute, you know, if they argue with you, that should be a giveaway right there that they are not from the company they claim to be from.
So what did they end up saying? Did they confirm any type of information, like, you know, the Apple ID associated with the account? You know, like,
no, they would
like an email address or so forth, or?
They were asking me for that information, and I'm like, first of all, if you have the information, provide it to me, and I'll tell you whether it is or is not correct.
You were arguing with these guys about the fact that they were Microsoft or they were Apple, and you were talking about how they could not give you the information to begin with because they were asking you for that info. So go ahead from there, and we'll just pick up where we left off here.
So in the case of the iCloud situation, they claimed, we went back and forth for about 15 minutes with the guy on the other end of the phone saying, trying to convince me that he was from Apple. And I wasn't having any bit of it because I know he was a fraud. And listening to many different security programs, podcasts, including you talk about this kind of phishing attempts on how to give people information, I knew he was a fraud right away. And what even gave it away more is the fact that he argued with me. If it had been a professional from one of them companies, Microsoft or Apple, they would have asked me to identify myself. They wouldn't have asked me for any information. They would have asked me my name, and I know I said I contacted Apple about the situation, and they said there was very little they can do to stop those calls coming in that was identifying them calls, because those kind of calls are spoofed. Who knows what country those calls are coming from. That's what the Apple person told me I spoke with. And so we went back and forth for 15 minutes. And next thing I know, the person gave up and hung up on me. because I wouldn't give him what he wanted.
Then, I mean, I called up Apple and told them, you know, I've got an account. My address is out of date. I can't find out how to change it. I went to iCloud. It's inaccessible. So how do I do this? And they walked me through it. I changed it with them on the phone, and they verified the information took.
Yeah, and that's the way it's supposed to be done. They don't call you by phone and asking you for the information.
And the worst of it is that they used one of Apple's probably numerous, you know, banks of numbers that they have. That of course we know 1-800-MY-APPLE and 1-800-275-2273, which is my other Apple number which we have. So both of them are well known, but they could probably have several others.
And then the guy from Microsoft, that was another 15 to 20 minute call trying to convince me he was from Microsoft, which I had heard about this scam before, I received the call. So I was aware of how this worked, and I played around with him. And again, he got nasty with me when I wouldn't give him he wanted access to my computer. And we can only imagine what would have happened if I had gave him the access that he wanted. At that time I did have a computer, and he got angry and hung up on me. But so many, my biggest problem with this whole phishing thing is older people who don't know any better, because they get taken every day by this stuff.
And there was a 92-year-old lady who got picked up by Uber to go to the bank to deliver a check. And the Uber driver, and I'm not kidding with you, I'll tell this story. The Uber driver actually talked her out of it and told her that it was a scam. I don't have the whole conversation. I don't think it was really disclosed about the conversation, but this lady, I guess, was going to deliver this $25,000 check to the bank, probably to send a wire as instructed. And a savvy person was able to talk her out of it. And so this is why I tell these stories, like, especially after I read an article. And then what's funny is I get an email, and I tell you guys I got this email, and this is what it said. And that's what's interesting about this whole ordeal. That's why I wanted to bring you on, because you said you had a story to tell, and I think these stories are very, very valuable.
Yeah, I agree, because there's still people being taken by those scams, and there's many, many more scams like this out in the world today.
And it's every day. It's every day now.
It's every day, and then, and you got, then you have, a 100 phone calls a day from different scammers. That's the other thing. Supposedly, the government is supposed to, and the phone company, should I say, is supposed to be doing a thing to stop all the annoying phone calls that many of us get. And now I got to say, Metro PCS does a great job with this. Such a good job, in fact, that there has been a couple phone calls that has been from automated numbers that Metro PCS has blocked. And so we know that at least T-Mobile is starting to get better about blocking annoying phone calls. And maybe some of the scams will stop. If the phone calls can't get in, then the scammers will find another way to scam us out of money.
What about the technology that has been talked about through Security Now and other articles called Shaken and Stir? It's supposed to be something to do with telephone number ANI identification, from what I remember from what Steve was talking about.
Yeah, the way that's supposed to work is if it's a phone number that's inactive, a phone number that's being spoofed, if it's not an active phone number, it's supposed to be automatically blocked. And I think that T-Mobile is doing. I think T-Mobile and T-Mobile and AT&T is working on that at the moment. All the phone companies are supposed to be in on it, but I've only noticed it with Metro by T-Mobile so far, and I was with AT&T for a little bit, and they hadn't started doing it as of 3 months ago. But I think that's an awesome idea to stop those thousands upon thousands of phone calls every day. Now, that should help cut back on the scams too.
Until they start coming from legitimate numbers, which they'll probably figure out real quick.
Oh yeah. I
don't even answer my phone. If I don't recognize the number, I was at Braille Institute and a number called me and I didn't answer it. I was at the library. And they left me a message and gave me a number back. It matched the number they were calling from, and I called back. There was an answering machine, but then they called me back. I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't take your call." I get so many calls that, you know, from numbers I don't even recognize, and most of the time they don't leave messages, so I don't even know who's calling me, so I refuse to answer the phone. She said, "I understand. Yeah. I have the same problem. I recently have gotten numbers from an 818 numbers that I don't even know if they're valid phone numbers, and they end up not leaving me messages. So either they've misdialed or they were trying to scam me and they got voicemail and they don't want to blow up voicemail."
No, I think we could go on and on about different scams and make a whole podcast of nothing but scams. But I think it's important to get the message out there, especially if you have older folks who's listening that don't understand this kind of stuff and needs to, you know, I'm not up to date on the financial scams out there. There's been a number of them where people has took. There's a lot of tech scammers out there.
And that's why I put that webinar out That was one reason why I put that webinar out, was because they did a great job. Fish Labs and that whole team did a great job with covering the different types of scams, even though they're now moving to social media.
Yeah, and I was listening to that episode, and that reminded me about my stories about Microsoft and iCloud.
So talk to me a little more about Microsoft. What specific information do they want from you?
Well, not particular information. They wanted to they wanted me to download a program which I'm familiar with called TeamViewer. They wanted to access my computer. Supposedly, the Microsoft situation was I had a virus on my computer, so which I didn't. So they were claiming that I had a virus. They detected a virus on my computer. And so they wanted me to download the program to allow them to remotely access my computer, which would have been a mistake on my part to do.
Well, Microsoft, if there's a well-warranted threat, they could get into our computers already through their own tools, because they have removed threats from many different machines. At one time, it was talked about, I believe, on Security Now, where they went in and cleaned up people's machines who were infected with something, but they don't call you about it. They'll just take care of it.
Well, I didn't know they did that kind of, okay.
I didn't know that either, I think I heard it on Security Now, where they had gone in and did some cleanup on from something or another. It's not widely known, and I don't think they do it too often, but I kind of remember this, but I don't know if it was a one-off thing. I don't remember, but you know, if they're going to do something, they're just going to take care of it through their own tools or push an update which will remove whatever's going on, you know?
So
I don't see them calling people. How are they going to call you to tell you that you're infected?
I don't think I would have been taken bad even if I had not heard about the situation ahead of time, because to my knowledge, I don't recall even giving my phone number to providing Microsoft my phone number. So I don't think that they would have knew how to contact me anyway. And so I think that that would have I think that would have automatically put up a red flag to me. But of course, not everybody is as aware of this stuff as I am, because I listen, you know, I follow Security Now and other security sites that covers this kind of stuff, and people there's so much security stuff out there, folks. I know it's hard to keep up with and understand it all, but it's important to at least understand what's out there, what kind of scams is out there, to protect itself.
And that's why I decided to just say forget it, because that was all I was seeing was breaches and this and that, and I wanted to do something else, and I thought, you know what? After, you know, a while of not doing podcasts, like, this has got to be it. We have got to get this word out, even though it might be repetitive and it might be boring. You know, this is the landscape, and I can't fight it anymore. I fought it in 2017, and in 2018 and 2019, I hit the ground running and said, this is it. You know, I can explain this, I can read these articles, give my take on it. You know, maybe I'll tell a story about something I've read that has actually happened to me, and do that. And by you coming on, Michael, you are opening our eyes. And of course, I've been doing a lot of reading on this. And one of our close friends, I'm not going to name her at the moment, but she works with the government, and you know, she's been sending me things, and I'm going to start blogging some of them. I'll be taking a look at them and seeing what I want to blog about. But, you know, there isn't enough coverage of this. And the fact that my podcast reaches the blind community, this is a good thing, because you know, places like Security Now and others, you know, cover these, but not everybody gets it. So if we hear something from a podcast like I did with Engadget and YouTube, and I pass it along, then, you know, it's a good thing.
Yes, it is, and it keeps people up to date on what's going on out in the world today.
So I'm happy to have you on, and of course, you know, people are welcome to submit audio to me. You can use services out there and send a link to me at tech@menvi.org, tech@menvi.org. That's the address I use for this podcast. If you've got other addresses and you know me and you know how to reach me other ways, you can contact me there too. Michael, it's been a pleasure. I know we had a bit of a technical problem, but be that as it may, you know, those types of things happen too. I wanted to do this segment with you. I know you wanted to bring it up. Is there anything else you want to bring up before we close this podcast?
Not that I can think of at the moment. As far as contact information, I am on LabWell at 3069. You can text me at 865-234-2980.
All right.
With any comments, hope this is very informative. I hope we keep you all up to date on all this stuff the best as we can, because this is a very important topic.
I believe you're absolutely correct, and I'm in agreement with you, and I'm gonna stand behind you, and we'll work with each other on scheduling and so forth to bring you the news that you need to have in the long term. And of course, other people can also contact me with things they're interested. I don't want to just, you know, talk about this, that, or the other. You know, if there's something you want us to talk about on the podcast, whether it's me by myself or I should get a bunch of people together, you know, we'll figure all that out. But it starts with you, the listener. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the program today and sharing your knowledge and wisdom about several experiences about these types of scammers, and I really appreciate your time.
That's not a problem. I'm going to try to come on more often, and I got a lot of catching up to do, so you all may hear from me pretty quick.
Absolutely, and you know, we can, depending on how urgent these things are, you know, and what's coming up on my scheduled podcasting, you know, you just never know how it's going to turn out, so... We may have to push it back, but it's never too late.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming on our program, and we look forward to hearing from you soon.
You're very welcome.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Michael in Indiana, myself, and several others were talking about a very interesting dilemma. And this is quite interesting because we all know that technology is changing. And we all know that the hackers and crackers and scammers are everywhere. And we know that they will stop at nothing to get at our data. But what about us? I'm talking about our use of the technology, our use of the web. And how it all works. LiveWire, for those who do not know, is a telephone entertainment system with bulletin boards, conference rooms, games, voicemail, one-on-one chat, and the ability to upload and download content you find or wish to submit to the system for various purposes. This podcast gets uploaded there to my show at box 2276, and it also appears on a system board for podcasts, which is board 974. Now, if you're listening to this from my show and you would rather get it directly when it becomes available on the feed, you have the option to do that. And that is the beauty of this system. This system also has distribution lists, public and private. It's got a dedicated plus telephone number for those who pay, and the paying features are interesting to say the least. Now, why am I doing an overview of LiveWire? Because LiveWire is run by a computer like any particular phone system. Your voicemail boxes that you get when you sign up for service. Your particular ordering system when you use an app and you want to buy Starbucks on the way. There's so many things that use the computer and the internet nowadays. But what I haven't mentioned about LiveWire is that there is now a LiveWire telephone network, which allows people to call using the internet and not the traditional phone line. You do have to have a box, however. In saying all this, it leads to the topic that we were talking about, and that's the connection to the website or service that you are trying to use. Sure, your voicemail box on your landline telephone, you dial in. You don't particularly access it over the internet, but your connection to the Starbucks app, your connection to Livewire, your connection to your bank, all have one thing in common. Although Starbucks specifically is an app, but if you visit their website, chances are your connection is secure. Now, secure connections are great. They allow you to conduct your business uninterrupted by potential prying eyes. And this is where this particular update and this discussion comes in. There was a gentleman who reported on the help board that he was having difficulty accessing LiveWire's website. There are two web addresses for LiveWire. The first one, which has been publicly known for a long time, is called livewireusa.net. The other one, which has been relatively new, is livewire.us. Amadeus, the maintainer, had decided to make the connection HTTPS only. If you tried to connect through HTTP, you were going nowhere. And more websites, as we know, are going to HTTPS because if you don't, then information that may need to be encrypted, like your username and password to log in, is sniffed by potential people. And when he implemented this, you couldn't type http://livewireusa.net. It wouldn't go anywhere. You had to actually type HTTPS, but that's since been fixed. Now, the connections to HTTPS are done through SSL or TLS. SSL is Secure Sockets Layer, and TLS is Transport Layer Security. According to my knowledge of this, they're both pretty much the same. And according to what I've heard from Security Now, TLS is now up to 1.3. And that's all well and good. So what happened with this gentleman? This gentleman is running Windows 8. He's running some version of Firefox. And he's running JAWS version 16. The technical support that he got said, I wouldn't recommend 17 or 18 because it's not very good. And 16 is your best option. And of course, that is opinion. Well, recently, this gentleman started having issues connecting to Livewire. At the same time, I, too, was using the Livewire telephone network, and I, too, was having issues. A couple of things happened with me. First, Amadeus reported that he had updated the certificate to a 1.2 certificate, if I remember correctly. And after doing some more investigating by turning on a VPN, I determined that I had other issues which were resolved. Now, Steve Gibson talked about support for older browsers at one point. And what happens is that you have a connection and the browser asks what SSL and TLS it supports so it can connect. And a website owner like Steve Gibson and Amadeus can choose to say, I only support browsers that have the latest technology, which is TLS 1, 1.1, and 1.2. And 1.3, for that matter. And SSL connections, 3 and below, I don't want you to connect using them. This is known as a cipher suite order. And so Amadeus had made some adjustments, and other website owners may make this adjustment too, to say anything below, you know, TLS 1.x, I don't want you connecting. Those browsers are out of date and we're no longer supporting them. The gentleman said he was going to contact Nod32's technical support team to determine if they can help him fix the problem. And he can do that. But this is a browser-specific problem. Because he's running such an older browser, the Cypher Suite setup and what is supported can't be fixed. And he can call them up, but I bet you he's going to find out that his version of Windows is out of date. I'm not going to sit here and trash people on what they want to use. And if it works for you, that's great. But what the issues are now is that these cipher suites in the order of how websites want to connect through whatever protocols is going to change. And Livewire is using the latest security possible and choosing to eliminate support for older browsers which have not been updated and could have big time security problems that could harm the network. And I think that's great. Let's take another example. In providing the technical support so that an operator can deal with this, I looked up the specs for JAWS. JAWS The latest release, version 2020, runs on 7, 8.1, and 10. Not 8, not XP, not 3.1, 95, 98, Millennium, not Server 2000, but 7, 8.1, and 10. And there are servers that it will run on, and you can get those details through Freedom Scientific's website. And I bet you that the browser, Firefox, which was what he was using, is not compatible with version 8, which is why Firefox wasn't updated to support the latest Cypher suites and TLS connections. And this gentleman's going to have a hard time if sites are moving to this model, which Michael in Indiana and I are suspecting that it will. And we, as disabled people, need to understand this. I started in DOS and used 95, 98, Vista, 7, and 10. Now, I don't remember why Microsoft decided not to support 8 anymore. But I do remember that after 8.1 came out, they serviced 8 for a little bit, and then they put a sunset on 8. Now, Windows 7 recently lost its support, but it was due. They lost their support January 2020. Although it would not surprise me after this breach of security SSL certificate signing bug that was released this year, that they patch that. But after that, that'll more than likely it, unless there's another big time security problem that they decide will be patched. Now, XP hasn't necessarily been patched, although it has been patched for some of the big-time security problems as of late. But normally, when they stop supporting an operating system, that's it. So, this is a cautionary tale to let everybody know about the dangers of running really outdated software. You'll be fine for a while, but then you'll start having problems that will be beyond any type of security that you may or may not have. And NOD32 may be working well for him, and his setup may be working well for him, but if he can't access Livewire now, it will be other sites in the future, and then he's going to wonder what to do. And the forums talking about what to do to fix the problem aren't helping, which tell me that it is a complete block on his browser because it doesn't support the connections that Amadeus and other websites will impose to have the best security connection possible to their networks. What do you guys think of that? It's happening now. And I'm confident it will be a bigger problem in the not too distant future across the internet. Have you supported somebody in this situation? I'm curious on what you have told them, and you can contact me at tech, T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. If you're on LiveWire, my box number is 2276. In this busy time, this podcast has been delayed, and it's time to end this program. You know what really interested me about this particular program was the discussion with Michael in Tennessee in regards to the whole fishing and various stories that can be told that we can always tell, because people are going to be coming on the internet and they're not going to have any idea on what to look for. And I'm not about to say that they're stupid, okay? I'm saying that if you're on the internet and you set up an email address, and all of a sudden you're getting targeted with things that have been discussed during that particular segment, you could fall for it because you don't know what signs to look for. You've never bought anything online. You don't really understand how it works. So you trust what they're saying. So if there is nothing else that you get out of this podcast, it is the fact that you need to understand these particular signs that have been discussed so that you can be better informed to make the right decision. And seeing how this is going to be an ongoing threat, at least for the foreseeable future, I think that was the most important segment we could cover on this particular podcast. And that was segment number 2, if you remember. All of this podcast has been pretty informative, but I think segment 2 was probably the most important thing and the real driving home aspect of this particular podcast. And don't forget segment 3 in regards to the SSL discussion, because that can also help you make sure you're as safe as humanly possible. Between those two segments alone, you're going to start in the right direction. My contact information is as follows. Email, iMessage, tech, T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. If you're the text message kind, you can do so via the normal method or via WhatsApp. The telephone number is 804-442-6975. Remember that with WhatsApp, you can also send me a voice message. And I don't mind getting voice messages if that's your style of communication. I hope each and every one of you have enjoyed the program as much as I have. Coming up on future podcasts, we'll talk more about assignment number 18 and changes that were made to the way that the percent codes worked in my file that Braille 2000 also understands. And also, if it's graded before the next podcast, I'll let you know how that turned out as well. I'll also contemplate bringing you another webinar. We recently had a very insightful webinar, but you just never know what's going to come up on the next podcast. And so until that happens, please remember to stay safe, ask questions, stay cool or warm depending on where you are, and have yourselves a great day.